And now, the Phil Henry Show with Phil Henry. West of the Rockies, dial 1-800-449-8686. East of the Rockies, dial 1-800-449-8686. First-time callers, dial 1-800-449-8686. And the wildcard line is 1-800-449-8686. And now, here's Phil Henry.
I have to go on the air. What was your point, sir?
Well, I didn't have a point, Phil. I just wanted to say I noticed where these two prison escapees from Iowa, one of them was caught.
Yes, I did see the news.
And I was just calling to see if you had any information. I believe one of the men who escaped was a Caucasian, the other was Hispanic. Is that correct?
I don't have any information. I've seen the picture of the man that hasn't been caught is Caucasian.
Okay, all right. Okay, Subcommander Jones, yeah, that makes sense, okay. All right, Phil.
Well, can I ask you something? I'm just curious. Why?
I don't want to start anything. Our theory is correct. So
no. All right. I mean, you don't have to tell me.
Well, I'll tell you this much, Phil. I know you got to get on with your program. You notice that the man who is caught is a Mexican or anything, but he's Hispanic, and the white man's still free. So. That kind of gives you, I could go both ways on that kind of a deal. It's not a racist thing, but...
No, not at all, sir. Not at all. So what's your point?
Well,
and I don't think the guy that was caught was Hispanic.
Well, he's either that or Jewish. So
get out of here, you freak. Either that or Jewish. So the guy that hasn't been caught yet is the white man. Yeah, he's smart, huh? Where's he living in Dipsy Dumpsters? Well, the guy that got caught, man, is back. He's already got a hot meal in him and probably something else hot in him, if you'll pardon the expression. Now, that's terrible. Anyway, this is the Phil Henry Show, and tonight we will debut a couple of cuts from the new Are You For Real 2005 Best of Phil Henry CD. I have it right here. In fact, on the cover is a picture of Bobby Dooley that will scare you. It'll probably scare you half to death. I believe it will scare you to the point where you lose, well... You lose your mud. It is a frightening picture with the bleached hair and the fright wig hairdo and the whole butterfly sunglass thing. And she's got that freaking diamond necklace around her neck. What's that? I didn't know that Steve made that kind of jack what does he do? He's a wildly successful landscaping architect. What is that? And anyway, it's a solid, it's a beautiful thing. We have two discs. One is the skits. The other is the calls. I thought we'd raise the price this year, but we haven't. The price is still $20. There is a $3.50 handling charge. And if I get any complaints about that this year, any at all, you know I've got return addresses. And, you know, the letter bomb, they've improved on how it can be concealed. So I better not say that, because if somebody actually gets a letter bomb, they're going to go, and Mr. Henry also said.
And what did he say?
He said, and the letter bomb's going to improve.
Aha!
All right, another thing that you got to see, you're going to, ladies, you have to go to my website and check out a video that will be up tonight. It is a video of me on television from 1987. Was I a stud? Yes. Oh, hey, dude, serious. I just checked it out. It reminds me of that great actor. What was his name? James LaGrosse. You know James LaGrosse, the actor? Just fantastic. And he's in this movie, Rapture, and Mimi Rogers picks him up. He's a hitchhiker. He goes, wow, I'm really surprised you picked me up. I mean, I wouldn't pick me up. There's no way. If I saw me hitchhiking, there's no way I'd pick me up. No double way I'd pick me up. On the other hand, if I picked me up, I would have sex with me. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I would have sex with me. Anyway, now I'm just sort of halfway joking. But check it out. I don't know if Doug has it up yet, Mark. Mark's checking for it on the... But it'll be in our video archive section. And what it was a fundraiser for Channel 28 in the city, here in the city of Los Angeles, which is the public television station. It was 1987. And in 1987, I went to work for a classic rock station. Now, you know what a classic rock station is, right? Well, in 1987, it was brand new. I mean, and what it was trying to recapture, it, the same way that Disney tries to recapture the feel of the Old West. See, there was the Old West, and then there's Disney's Frontierland, right? What's the difference? Well, if you've been in the Old West, Frontierland ain't getting it done, right? But if you've never been to the Old West, Frontierland's pretty cool. Well, the same thing with the classic rock format as opposed to the original progressive rock days. If you remember what those days were like, classic rock was like going to Disneyland. It was like riding on the freaking swan boats. So That's where I was in 1987. I was riding the Swan Boats of Radio. And anyway, so we're doing this classic rock thing, and the public TV station was doing one of their fundraisers. You've seen these fundraisers where the folks get on and they say, please donate money to your local public television station. And that's what I was doing. And I was on because they were doing the documentary, the Complete Beatles or the Real Beatles, a Beatles documentary. So they asked me to come on and be one of the co-hosts of the segment. And I can't believe the out. First of all, the suit, you got to get a load of what I'm wearing. Some kind of like a white jacket with a red shirt. But just handsome as hell. Handsome as hell. And so there it is for all of you guys. And I just want you to know, were I able to grow hair and lose 60 pounds, I'd look just like that today. So that'll be on our website as soon as Doug, you know, is done kind of picking through his McDonald's fries and kind of, you know, Googling and just surfing all kinds of anal sites. And anyway, I'm joking around, Doug. All right, now in a moment. Oh, by the way, tonight we are going to be talking about genealogy. Our special guest this evening has discovered her son is doing a report for his high school and found out that his father is related to, so therefore he, the entire family, is related to a very significant person from history. How do you teach your kids humility when you know that your family has major historical ties? We'll talk about that tonight. And coming up, a real interesting flashback. It is a Tim Robbins interview that we did. And what happened to him, Mark? He was eating cherry pie filling, and what happened? And he got sick. So Susan Sarandon had to finish the interview. So we'll be talking with a flashback of Tim Robbins on our show coming up on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Coming up tonight, an interview with a woman whose son, in a genealogy report for a high school history class, uncovered the fact that the family is related to a pretty significant historical figure. And they're trying to keep the kids from getting a big head about all of this stuff. We'll talk with her. Coming up tonight on the Phil Hendry Show, it's time now for a By Request flashback brought to you by Kaopectate. That's right. Sometimes it just pays to drink Kaopectate. Drink it by the bottle if you have to, because you never know. The next morning, it comes out like napalm. Kaopectate, available in most drugstores. Now, this flashback is from Mike, and he writes, Dear Phil, I was wondering if you could play that Tim Robbins bit where he ate the uncooked cherry dessert topping that gave him the squirts and then blamed George Bush for poisoning him. I believe Susan Sarandon did most of the talking because Tim got so sick, he was simply moaning from the bathroom. Thanks, Phil. Mike. Well, here it is, Mike, and it's from over a year ago, August of 04, Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon. First of all, for those of you joining us for the Tim Robbins Report, Tim is not well. You're in the hot tub now, Ms. Sarandon?
Yes, I am.
Because I can hear it's bubbling away.
I got the air blowers on. I just, well, it's none of your business. But what I wanted to say more than anything is that if the Bush administration's listening tonight, okay, good for you. Fun for you. You got one on us, but we'll get back at you. And Phil,
oh, yeah, that hurts.
Okay, you can hear.
Is that Mr. Robbins?
Yes, it is. What happened basically was this, Phil. I was out of town concluding some scenes for a film that I'm doing. And Tim was here at home alone. And he decided to open up a can of cherry dessert topping that we had in our pantry. By about 2 o'clock Sunday morning, the report that I got from Tim's personal doctor is his lower intestine almost came out. And,
okay, so are you saying there was some kind of botulism?
Some kind of botulism? I thought the guy was going to crap his brains out. I mean, I'm
turning inside out over here!
You can hear him.
So I want to be clear, Ms. Sarandon. Susan Sarandon joins us. Tim Robbins is
on the toilet. You might as well tell.
All right, I didn't want to say, but
well, it's the Bush administration. Tell him right now.
Okay, Tim opened up a can of cherry dessert topping?
Yeah.
How long had it been in the pantry?
What does that got to do with anything? Because
well, I mean, some of that stuff goes back.
No. What these people in Washington are doing because of my political work and Tim's, because of the fact that he and I are so much in love and have a family, and are very vocal in our support for Senator Kerry, they have decided to try and poison him. And I can tell you...
Okay, there's blood. That's great.
You can hear what's going
on. I don't really want... I think that for the privacy of Mr. Robbins...
Close the bathroom door, Tim. Close the bathroom door. I can tell you right now, Phil, that the Bush administration is going to pay dearly for this. Tim was supposed to make a big speech this weekend, so what do? They slip a can of contaminated cherry dessert topping into our pantry. Naturally, he opens it up and eats it straight. And
when you say cherry dessert topping, isn't that the stuff you're supposed to put into pie filler?
Yeah.
Well, what's he doing eating it straight out of a can?
He can do anything he wants.
He can... Well, I know, but if that's... Aren't you supposed to cook that?
That doesn't make any difference. Doesn't make any difference at all. The fact of the matter is, the guy is sitting on the toilet right now, and I mean seven shades are coming out because of the Bush administration. How you doing, Tim?
Yeah!
See?
Well, obviously he's not having a good time, but you can't blame the Bush administration.
Okay, here we go. So you're going to be an apologist.
No, Ms. Sarandon, I'm not being an apologist for anyone, okay?
Somebody get me a wine cork!
In just a minute. You know what you're doing?
I'm not being an apologist for the Bush administration. I'm saying that them slipping a contaminated can of cherry dessert topping into your pantry that Tim's going to eat straight out of the can sounds to me like it's more...
It sounds weird to you, huh? Well, in Hollywood, we do those things, Mr. Henry. We eat dessert topping straight out of the can, okay?
X-lax!
What do you mean, X-lax? You don't want X-lax. So... They kept him from making his big speech this...
Where was he going to make a speech?
I don't know. It's some club, somebody's pool party. I don't know. Some speech someplace. And look what they did to him. He's in there right now, and his eyeballs are going to come out the wrong way in a minute.
No!
See? So you and your Tim Robbins report, I guess you don't get one this week.
Well, look, I'm not sitting here trying...
No. I know your political affiliations. And I can tell you right now... Yeah, okay, that's good. I got the air jets on. And I'm telling you right now that...
The flusher's broken now!
All right, I'll get it fixed. I'm going to tell you right now that this isn't going to stand. And the CIA and the FBI and the NSA and the NSC and the NCAA, all of them, I don't care.
All right, so Tim Robbins, I am... Mr. Robbins has a very severe case of diarrhea as the result of eating a can of cherry dessert topping that the FBI put in your pantry.
Oh, you're saying that like I'm nuts?
No.
No, I can tell the sound of your voice. You're saying it like I'm nuts. You know what? I'm going to flush you the same way Tim's going to flush... You know what I'm talking about?
You have my mother on the phone?
I'll call your mother, Jesus.
All right, Susan Sarandon joins us along with Tim Robbins and...
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, fine. You know, that's based on a true story. I did that. That's why we did that bit. I went into the pantry at our house, and I don't know why, I had a sweet tooth, and I saw a can of cherry dessert topping, and I ate it. I thought it was like eating pudding. Little did I know. 1-800-449-8686, The Phil Henry Show here. By the way, speaking of politics and those things, I forgot to mention that November the 2nd was the anniversary of the death of Theo van Gogh. Now, Theo van Gogh was a filmmaker, one of these troublemakers, who made a movie about Islamic men who, all right, occasionally beat their women up. So what? Well, because he was stirring up trouble, because he was stirring up problems between the religions, he was... unfortunately found stabbed, shot, and beaten in a street in Amsterdam. And it was done by someone who also pinned a note to his body with a lot of vile things written on it. Now, I understand that's bad, but let's not go overboard. Now, there has been some comments made recently. Why didn't the film industry say something? Here is a filmmaker, a guy that made a documentary. Now, you take a great documentary filmmaker like Michael Moore. Nobody's trying to beat him up and shoot him and stab him. Why? Because he's making cool documentaries. He's not making one about Islamic guys beating up their women. Well, so what if they do? It happens. She gets out of line, you slap her around. What, is this something new? Here's this guy. And just because he's got the name Van Gogh, I guess he thinks his stuff doesn't smell, too. So he goes out, makes this movie. Naturally, some guy who wears a towel on his head got upset. I would. Shoots him, stabs him, leaves him in the street, pins a note to him, strolls down, gets him a quarter pounder with Cheve. gets into his tricycle or whatever the hell he rides and, you know, motors away. Now, this guy was a filmmaker, and some people have suggested because he was murdered by this Islamic guy, why doesn't the film industry say something about it? Why don't they take a stand against the murder of a fellow artist the way they take stands against cats like Bush? Where do you people think you get off asking a question like that? Number one, the people here in Hollywood have a lot to do. There's a lot going on. Oh, are you trying to tell me that they're not as seriously in danger from George Bush as this guy Van Gogh was from this Islamic guy? You don't know that. What if you find Barbara Streisand thrown from the back cliff of her house onto the rocks below? How do you know Bush didn't do that? So you can't say that she's not in danger. She's got to protect herself. This guy Van Gogh? I don't know, man. I mean, he's a filmmaker, just like the rest of these filmmakers. He's got to protect himself. He's got to hire a bodyguard. Why doesn't he take a limo where he goes? See, he's riding a bike. Get a load of that guy. Everybody knows that if you want to go someplace, you make movies, you get into a limousine, you idiot. But no, he had to ride a bike and he gets shot. See, Streisand and Sarandon ain't going to make that mistake. They'll go in a limousine. The dude that drives it is a paid bodyguard. Anyway, they got to go in a limousine in case Bush tries to shoot him off of their bicycle or, you know, stab him while they're riding down to get an ice cream cone. See? So I think it's very irresponsible for people to say Theo Van Gogh was a fellow filmmaker and he was murdered by an Islamic fascist, so why isn't the Hollywood film industry standing up and saying that's wrong? I think that's really unfair to say that when they've got so many other things that they have to do. Thank you. That's One Man's Opinion. I'm George Putnam. In a moment, how much does it cost really to buy a house? I mean, really. Does that money really go to the bank, or does it go to somebody we've never met? A little man who lives in a cave someplace.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Let's go to Charlie. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you, Phil, when you were mentioning just a moment ago about the Van Gogh gentleman, were you kidding? Or were you being sarcastic?
Well, I was being a little sarcastic.
You were being sarcastic?
Yes.
All right. So, do you agree with Susan Sarandon?
No, I don't. I was being sarcastic.
So you think that this gentleman, Theo Van Gogh, was not a good person, or...
No, I think he was a good person. I think he was a good filmmaker.
But you just felt it was all right to murder him.
No, I don't think it was all right to murder him.
Well, then what were you talking about? I'm not clear.
I was being sarcastic. I was, in a sarcastic way, commenting on the fact that this man was killed over a year ago, and there hasn't been one word from the film community or any artists group in general decrying it. It's been covered up.
What has?
The murder of Theo Van Gogh. The man...
No. I know about the murder of Theo Van Gogh. But what's been covered up? You said that...
The fact that nobody has said anything about this man. He was murdered in cold blood by a fascist Islamic guy, one of these Nazis in a bedsheet. And people still want to talk about how, you know, George Bush is the bad guy, and he's the one that caused all this problem. If there wasn't a George Bush in the world, well, hell, there wouldn't be any ragheads running around stabbing guys.
I don't get it.
Forget it. Get out of here.
Oh, hanging up on me. Are you a chicken?
1-800-449-8686. Time now to read some email. Phil, I just read your... I just needed to send you an email after reading your reply about the screening process. We have an article on our website about how we screen our shows, how we get the callers on the air. Have you ever wondered? You can go to our website because, believe me, the screening process in this show is unlike any in the history of talk radio. Anyway, James writes, I just needed to send you an email after reading your reply about the screening process. I guess I made it through your screening process and cranked you unwittingly. Years ago, you were talking to Roland Schwinn about eating at church and being proud of being fat, etc. I got through and talked about Jesus eating at weddings. You thought I hung up, but my wife hung up the phone because she thought it was terrible talking about Jesus like that. At that point in time, I thought most of your calls were by people that basically knew what was going on, that they were talking to characters. I didn't realize how hard it was to get on the air, but you have to realize there are probably a lot of people like me. Sorry for cranking you, but I love your show and stream it every day. Please don't get picked up by any sitcom. I've already been picked up by a sitcom. And I hate you, and I never want to see you again. No, that's cool, man. Like I say, if you can get through our screening process, you're a better man than me. His wife hung up the he's on the air, and he does. She's not digging it, so she just grabs the phone and hangs it up. Here is a here's another one. The NFL multi-channel add-on is totally worth it, writes Tom Fix. You get the 8 mini screens on the one channel, and then you also get the Red Zone channel. The Red Zone channel is the apex of sports entertainment. That Dumbo-looking Andrew Siciliano guides you from game to game. That's the guy I was talking. That's the one that I want to get, that Red Zone. Guides you from game to game, switching to the most exciting game of the moment. It's a beer-fueled journey to Blissville. Love the show, Stream Link for life. That's what I don't care about, 9 million tiny little screens. I mean, you know. Unless I had 9 million television sets, and that, unless I was that high, then that would be fine. If I was this big, say about 3 inches high, and I had a giant television that was, say, 2 stories tall, then having 8 million little things, that would be great. And I lived in a house that was 6,000 square feet, even though I was only 6 inches high. That would be great. It would take me like weeks to get from the bedroom to the kitchen. You imagine that, man? Then I go down to my television set. And what I do is I somehow get a rope ladder strung up to the sofa, and I climb the rope ladder. Okay, that's a half-hour shot. Then I make my way over to the giant remote that is sitting there on the sofa, and using a big sledgehammer, I hit the on button. Now the TV goes on, and using the same sledgehammer, I get it over to the channels that I want. Now I got 15 different things right there on the screen using that whatever the hell that DirecTV thing, and I'm 6 inches high, and I got all these television sets, right? You'd think that my life was just Blissville. No, it's not. I'm 6 inches tall. Now what happens is your wife mistakes you for a piece of laundry. Now you're caught in a dryer all afternoon. All right, here's one from Harold Byrne in West Haven, Connecticut, who writes, Phil, I just wanted to drop you a note and thank you for saving me from potentially going off the deep end. I recently had to take 2 13-hour flights from New York to Beijing and home again. I wasn't sure how I was going to keep myself from going batty being stuck on an airplane that long. Then I said to myself, hey, there's one person who can keep you entertained that long, Phil Hendry. So I got myself a backstage pass, downloaded a ton of shows to my iPod, and I laughed my ass off all the way over to China. Sure, the flight attendants and my fellow passengers thought I was nutty, especially the Chinaman to my left. However, I laughed myself sick. Good thing I was right near the can, last row, no tilt back on the seat. Thanks a lot, TWA. No, he says, anyway, if there was ever a better reason to get a backstage pass, I don't know it. Thanks, Harold Byrne. Well, there you have it, folks. If you're traveling to Beijing, China anytime soon, please get that backstage pass. It's a long flight. I've been to Beijing, and brother, once you've been there, you know you've been there. When you go to China, there's no mistaking you're in China. Looks a little bit like Mexico, except there's a whole lot of kind of black smog, and yeah, and there's Chinese people who are not unlike Mexicans. Same, very nice people, very friendly. But they've got stuff there that it's not like Mexico. I don't know. There's not enough oceans. You don't see any beaches. I can't really describe it, bud. The difference between China and Mexico.
We'll try.
Mexico and China are the same.
Yeah.
The people are the same, but there's some kind of a difference between them. I can't put my finger on it. They got the same kind of tan skin.
Yeah.
But there's a visual thing that I know one thing, the Mexican folks, when they have a billboard, I don't understand what it says, but I make out the letters. The Chinese, forget it. And there's something about the faces. You'd swear to God, a Chinese guy and a Mexican guy look exactly the same, except for a couple of areas.
Like a nose or something?
Nose, something. It's something with the nose. Maybe the mouth. Hi, Phil. In which bit did Bobby first say, are you for real? I know she says it a couple of times in Good Neighbors Initiative, but it seems she said it before that. It was at a moment when the subject matter was extremely serious, and when she said it, it was jarring. Maybe it was the bit called Turn That Frown Upside Down, where Bobby was inconvenienced by her friend's attempted suicide. It had the Brady kids singing Sunshine Day and Greg Brady singing something like Clowns Never Laughed Before. That reminds me, that same bit has a great line. If life gives you chicken poop, you make chicken salad. Other question, who's the guy on the cover of the best of the 1997 CD called Still on the Air? Thanks, Valerie. Some old creep that was at my wedding. I don't know. Some guy over at KFI took that picture. You know, when they did the CD, first of all, I had to talk the station into doing a charity CD. When I finally was able to talk them into it, very nice guy that works over there, Neil Saavedra, helped us do it, so I'm not blaming Neil, but it was like pulling teeth trying to get the CD done. So when they finally did the artwork for it, they just grabbed something that they thought was funny, and they put it on there without asking me, and there it is, some old guy at my wedding. When Marie and I got married at the Queen Mary down in Long Beach, and we invited a bunch of listeners. You know, when I first started at that station, it was 1996, and I did a personal appearance. And speaking of that, we will do our first signing in early December. That's why I was thinking of this. We're going to do our first signing for the 2005 CD in early December. And I remember I did a personal appearance when I first went on the air in 96 here in Los Angeles. And I was so depressed because it was just thousands of old people. And one woman came in and said, "I hate you." And I was sitting there, I was eating a burrito. It was after the whole thing was over, and I was just having a burrito and a little cup of tea. Just trying to, you know, I had on my spectacles, and I was reading, like, the Sunday Times. Just, I was, this woman just came in and assaulted me. So hopefully we'll have a better crowd at this one. But, yeah, that was just some guy that showed up. And then one more here. It says, "Phil, I don't think I can explain in an email how awesome you are. I've listened to you for about 5 years, and you haven't, and you've given me thousands of laughs, and I just want to thank you and keep bringing it on. You can't stop. I can't stop replaying the bit about the middle school teacher and the chicken, the part where you started laughing." What was that? The middle school teacher and the chicken? Is this one of those made-up jokes? Claire and the Wicca? It sounds like it's like, remember the middle school teacher and the chicken. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Coming up, Bobby Dooley on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
RC, go ahead.
Phil, great show as always.
Thanks.
Wanted to just pick your brain about something, Phil. First of all, want to say a big hurrah from everybody at Bradley Military Academy. Really love your show.
Thank you.
Wanted to pick your brain about something. I don't know if you've noticed, but classical music, if you see an ad about it, if there's a lady playing a violin, you've been mentioning recently on your program about Chinese. I wonder if you had any comment about it.
About what?
About the most of the classical music violin players are Chinese.
I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Well, you have to admit, when you see something like that on TV, when they show the string section of an orchestra, there's generally a handful of them.
When they show the string section of an orchestra?
Come, Mr. Hendry, don't play dumb. We all know...
What is this? Are you trying to...
Baba Booey.
Thanks a lot, bud. Another good screening job. 1-800-449... Come, Mr. Hendry. Don't play dumb. When you've seen the string section of a symphony orchestra, you must admit there's a handful of them. My son plays violin. My kid is 6'3 and about 280. He's a big dude. I mean, a cat is big. He ain't fat. I shouldn't say 280. Chris is about 210. I mean, he's a big cat. Plays the violin, man, and he doesn't care who knows it. Loves it. Loves classical music. He's one of these kids that's like, sort of, you know, we all knew one of them in school, you know. Hey, are you into, you know, you want to go and, I don't know, listen to some really, go to like the rock concert or something? No, not at all. The Mahler Symphony is at the Hollywood Bowl. You know, who's the one kid when they're like a, I don't know, anyway. So he's totally into that, and he's a big guy, man, and he plays this violin. And they said to him, well, you know, he really should be playing the viola, Mr. Hendry. The viola is made for a larger boy. Really? All right, I didn't know that. Apparently the viola is a big man's violin. It's a big-ass thing. And then you have the stand-up bass. Some guys pick that up and play it like that. So I said, that's solid. So for a summer, he took a class, this kid. And at the time, Chris was probably 14. And he wanted to take this class. I said, what is it? He says, it's video game composition. It's video game music composition. I go, you're kidding me. No. I said, where is it? UCLA. So we got a parking pass for UCLA, and I took him down. You know, once a week we go down there on a Saturday morning and drop him off, and he'd go in, and he'd take this video game music composing class at UCLA. Now, I don't know if that's exactly what it's called, video game music, but it's like video something composing. And he's like in there, 14, and all these other guys are like 30. And he's sitting there with these cats. And he comes home and he starts like, and he also plays the piano. We got him a keyboard and he's got the headphones. And the other thing that he wanted, he said, I think for Christmas I'd like to have the keyboard that actually has the computer program in it that will spit out the notes. I go, yeah, that'd be great, man. It's about $5,000, so no thank you. Are you nuts? Anyway, we got him something like a reasonable facsimile, which doesn't work. Thank you very much, sir, you at the music store who sold me that and said it was really great. It hasn't worked yet. Thanks so very deeply. Guy goes, oh, it's just as good, just as good. See, what it does is you plug it in, interface with the computer. I'll give you all the cables that you need, see? All the cables. Well, I want to make sure, man, because the piano, you know, and his computer. Oh, no. I think I sold you the piano. Are you the guy, the big guy, the bald head? Yeah, I'm the same guy that I was last year. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I sold you the piano. I know. This is the cables will interface. It's fine. Here's the male, here's the female. Here's the male. He's like, could you not use the sexual stuff? That's what it's called. It's the male, the female end. And what you do is you just plug that into the computer, and then the boy can make all the compositions he wants, see? Then it goes to the thing, see? Oh, okay, thank you, Edward G. So, anyway, I take this thing home, and I walk into his room 3 hours later. I go, how's it going? It doesn't work. Okay, great, thanks. All right, 1-800, anyway, make a long story short, he took this video game composing thing. Next thing I know, the cat's like, he's a groupie for this Imatsu dude that makes all the music for Final Fantasy. Now, I figure I'll give it another 12 months, and Chris is going to be, you know, leading the Vienna Symphony. And I better get tickets, and they better be good seats. Because I'm sick of that nosebleed crap you're giving me, man. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
In a moment, we'll be talking with Bobby Dooley about a discovery that her son Justin made doing a genealogy report for his history class. It turns out that one of Steve's second cousins was a high-ranking official in the Gestapo during World War II. That's coming up on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.